Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new edition of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and joining me this week is Pro Football Weekly Bears beat writer Bob Laguerre and Pro Football Weekly executive editor Hub Arkish. Guys, how's it going?
Doing well, thank you.
Doing good. Three more days.
Yeah, that's right. OTAs have wrapped up this week, and veteran minicamps start next week, and the training camp schedule came out this week as well for the Bears. Of course, they're getting an early start, and the start of the season doesn't seem that far away, does it, guys?
No, well, it really isn't that far away, I guess is the point. It's always unusual when you get picked for that Hall of Fame game. And obviously the reason the Bears and the Ravens are there is Brian Urlacher and Ray Lewis, arguably the two most high-profile members of this year's class. So playing their first preseason game on August 2nd, a full week before they normally would, requires them to go to camp a week early. So after years of going in anywhere the 24th through the 27th, the Bears will be report on the 19th. And, we always talk in our business about come the 4th of July, it's time to get ready, but this year more so than ever. So it is right around the corner. And, I think also, Bob, part of it is just that there's been a lot going on. I mean, the whole thing with the Kaepernick and Eric Reid collusion case that's gone on through the offseason, and now you've got the, new anthem policy. I won't offer any editorial comment unless somebody asks me to. And so we've had stories breaking, and now the gambling thing within the last week or two, I guess just before our last podcast. So it's been such an active, I think, offseason that it also feels like, it's rushing up on us quicker than usual.
Yeah, we've been saying for years, those of us who cover the NFL, that there isn't an off season. There's usually a couple of down weeks, maybe the first 2 weeks in July. But as you said, that's prep time for a lot of us. The thing I found interesting about training camp this year is, aside from the fact that it starts a week earlier than I can ever remember training camp starting, is that they have 16 practices in Bourbonnais. Five of them are closed to the public. I know they've done that in the past on a more limited basis. And obviously we haven't gotten a chance to talk to Matt Nagy yet about that, but it just seems like, I don't know if it's because they're installing a new offense or what the deal is, but 16 of those practices down there, of those five, will be close to the public. So they'll have 11 opportunities to see Matt Nagy install his new offense.
Guys, I just noticed that. I was looking at that this morning, and the same thing jumped out at me. And, Dan, another point, we're starting most of those practices at 8:15 in the morning this year. Now, that's fine by me. I don't mind, getting an early start. Gives you a full day work, but it raises two issues in my mind. Number one, part of the attractiveness of Bourbonnais as opposed to Platteville is that it's a day trip for folks. And so a lot of the fans who are coming down, to get in the line, to get through security, to get in and grab a seat for an 8:15 practice, people are going to be starting at 5, 6 in the morning. They certainly have not gone out of their way to make this convenient for Bears fans. And then the other question that occurred to me is, again, fine by me. We've got all day to write and work and hit our deadlines easy and maybe spend a little more time in the local establishments in Bourbonnais and Kankakee and Bradley at night. But what is the team going to do all day? I mean, if they practice from 8:15 to 10:30 or 11, they're done with the media by noon. I'm sure they'll go lift in the afternoon. They'll have some meetings. But unless they're going to give these guys more time off at night, it seems like it's going to make for awfully long days for these kids at camp.
I'll tell you what, Hub, if the Bears fans are taking that trip down 57 south from Chicago, they're going to have to get up bright and early in the morning or perhaps get a hotel stay the night before. Bob, I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you going to say?
No problem, Dan. You kind of hit on it. Maybe they're in collusion with the Chamber of Commerce down in the greater Kankakee area to force people to get a hotel room for the night before, so they're up bright and early for the start of practice. And that is an early start. The advantage, one of them that I can think of off the top of my head, is that if you do have some inordinately hot weather, you beat the heat by practicing that early. You're not out there in the midday sun, so players may appreciate that. But like Hub said, traditionally meetings go on until fairly late at night. If nothing else, this would probably keep guys from going out after those meetings, knowing they have to get up at 6 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah, and I think the point there, because you're right, Bob, those meetings used to run at 10 o'clock. They're not going to have these kids in meeting at 10 o'clock if they've got to be at breakfast at 6 and taping at 7. So obviously it's a new schedule. Everybody will adjust to it. But I expect for anybody who's not a rookie, and maybe even the rookie, the first week or 10 days of this camp is going to be a little more difficult than what we have become used to, just to get your body clock to adjust to whatever it is the Bears are doing.
And if I saw it correctly, there's only one night practice this year, correct?
I don't know that that's unusual. I know they have one, and they do that mostly for the locals, and they have a big fireworks show. But Bob, I could be wrong if my memory's playing tricks on me, but I think that's fairly normal. I think there's really been just one nighttime practice.
Well, I think the first couple of years they used to have a couple of them, and they've gotten away from it in years past. I think there may have actually been a couple of years in the very recent past where they didn't have any night practices, and it always struck me as odd why they wouldn't utilize that stadium. You have better seating for fans. We can stand on the sideline without being screamed at by fans because we're not blocking their view. And, again, you're if you've got a hot day, you're beating the heat by practicing at night. And I think, I don't know if it was John Fox or Lovie who initiated the different start times for practice. They had some noon starts because they play noon games. They had some night practices because they played night games. So they wanted to hit, go through the preparation and a dry run, if you will, to prepare for the season, which made a lot of sense. I don't know if it resulted in, any increased performance on the field, but I kind of miss those night practices. It was another good opportunity to get your stuff done during the day, go to practice, make sure nobody gets injured, and call it a day. And it was a nice change of pace, I think. And, I wish they'd have more of them. I did notice that I didn't see that they had that family fun deal they have at Soldier Field, which always has occurred right in the middle of camp and always the same weekend as Lollapalooza. I didn't see that in there, which is the best move they could have made, in my opinion.
Yeah, my answer to that is thank God. That's just, I understand the fans must have liked it. They'd get 20, 25,000 out there, so I'm sorry for you guys, but there really was nothing attractive about that for the team or the media. And I think, guys, one thing about these night practices and the use of that game stadium that most of us tend not to think of, when you get 90, 200 to 350 pounders running around on a set area of turf, it can do a fair amount of damage. That is Olivet Nazarene's game stadium. That's a field that they need to take better care of. The reason they work on the practice fields outside is that there's four different regulation football size fields, and they rotate from field to field each day with practice. We should get Kenny Marock, the Bears Director of Field Services, to visit us on a podcast one day, and he could tell us a lot more about it. But I'm going to guess that there's a real financial consideration there, and part of their deal with Olivet Nazarene as to, why they only use that game stadium. And once they're probably limited to that as much to protect that turf and not have to spend a lot of money on it as anything else.
Well, Bears fans that want to see that final practice in Bourbonnais, that is slated for 7:10 p.m. Start time on Saturday, August 11th. And, of course, as we said, fireworks display follows that practice. So fun for the family. Definitely go down and check that out. Bob, as we said at the top of the show, this was the last week for OTA practices. And what were some of your takeaways from what you saw this past week?
Well, the obvious thing is that the defense is ahead of the offense, and I think that's normally the case, especially this year when the offense is still going through install, still learning the plays. Guys are still learning where to line up and what route to run. The defense, as we mentioned earlier in the week, is everybody who matters really is back. No disrespect to Mitch Unrein, a great role player in the past for the Bears, but everybody who counts, everybody who's a core part of this defense is back this year. They've all been in Vic's system for 2 or 3 years, except for rookies like Eddie Jackson. The only addition probably is going to be Roquan Smith, the rookie first-round pick, and everybody expects him to make the defense better. Other than that, you've got to find a defensive end to replace Mitch Unrein. It's either going to be Jonathan Bullard, could even be the rookie Bill Al Nichols, and Roy Robertson Harris is a guy who, as he takes another step, could be in the mix there as well. But for the most part, you've got guys who have been there before, who have started multiple games for multiple years in Vic's defense. Vic is well aware of everything that these guys can do. He excels in putting guys in a position where they can excel. And, you know, I think that's, you know, that will have to be the side of the ball that carries this club in the early going, because I think it'll still be a learning process, at least for the first month of the season. But I think this defense might be good enough to do that, to keep them in games as the offense, hits its stride.
You know, guys, the one thing that really jumped out at me, and it was kind of from week to week, and, you know, we realize that people listen to these podcasts at different times, but the practices that were open to the media were the 16th, the 23rd, and the 30th this past week. The week before, out there on the 23rd, Bob, I know you and I talked about this. I don't think I've ever seen so many dropped passes by an NFL team in one practice. And they seem to have cleaned that up a bit this past week. There wasn't as much of it. There still is a bit more than you would like. But I think that Matt Nagy's offered a pretty reasonable explanation for that. The focus right now is on learning the new offense. It's learning your assignments. It's being able to execute them without thinking. Clearly, you have to get to that stage. Clearly, a lot of these guys are still thinking. And when you're thinking about whether you're running the right route or how to run it, you're not focused on holding on to the football. So I don't think it's epidemic or anything to worry about. But it really did jump out at that during that second week of OTAs, and seemed to have been cleaned up a little bit this past week. We've got, of course, mini camp where we'll see them three straight days next week, first week in June, and it'll be interesting to see how much better that gets.
Yeah, it was interesting because Matt Nagy wasn't really addressing that topic, but he mentioned, as far as Allen Robinson returning on a very limited role to practice, that it was good for him to catch some balls from Mitch Trubisky, which he's never done before. And the same thing can be said for Trey Burton, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller. Guys who are going to be a major part of this offense have never caught a pass from Mitch Trubisky in a regular season NFL game. So maybe that's part of it. I guess if you've been catching balls from Blake Bortles for 3 years, catching balls from Mitch Trubisky is going to be a little bit different, as it would with any quarterback. So there is going to be an adjustment period, and maybe that has something to do with the drops. Hopefully it's something that he can work through in the off season and in training camp before it gets to the regular season. And I think there's plenty of time for that. But you're talking about a large group of guys who are going to become or are going to have to become familiar with Mitch Trubisky and the way he delivers the ball, and Trubisky becoming familiar with how these guys run routes. It's a lot of on-field work to do between now and opening day.
Yeah, and Dan, it's very important to point out, and I think Bob said it very well, a lot of folks working from the office, from the studio, whatever, they heard Nagy on the inline feeds talk about Robinson and immediately was, oh, Allen Robinson is back at practice. That is absolutely not the case. What they were talking about it was the first time with the whole team on the field that Robinson stepped into some of the route drills and just on his own ran a few routes, clearly at three-quarter speed, and caught some balls that Mitch Trubisky threw. Allen Robinson is not back at practice, and Matt Nagy specified when we talked to him after the workout on Wednesday, he's not going to be back at practice until they get to Bourbonnais. We'll see him out there at minicamp again next week. Both he and Kyle Long doing a lot of individual stuff. Occasionally they might step in on a unit drill where the offensive line is doing a walkthrough or receivers are running three-quarter speed routes. But the goal with those two is to have them ready to go close to full speed when they get to camp in Bourbonnais. So both are still at least a month and a half away.
Dan, just to throw in another thing, I think that even though the goal is to have them 100% for the start of training camp, you're going to see both those guys, Kyle Long and Allen Robinson, have what you used to call the veterans' days off. Those guys are not going to be on the field going full speed 3 or 4 days in a row. If they practice a day or two in a row, you're going to see them on the side, maybe doing some individual work. I don't think it's going to be anything to be concerned about. I think they're going to bring these guys along slowly. They want to have them on the field from the start of training camp. They don't necessarily want to have them competing in every training camp practice. They want them ready for day one.
Well, and I think you guys would both agree no one wants to rush him back and cause any other injury, because you're not really stacked at the receiver position, and I think they're counting on him to come back and be able to perform at his best.
Well, Dan, you know, there's no question about it. I mean, we are talking here about arguably if not the two most valuable, the second and third most valuable players on this football team right now. I mean, clearly Mitch Trubisky is the guy things are being built around on defense. There is concern about Leonard Floyd. We should add him in the injury rehab conversation, although, Bob, I got a question for you about that one. But relative to Allen Robinson, you just gave him $42 million. You guaranteed him $25 million. He's only 24 years old. That's one of the reasons that you were willing to make that investment in him. You're going to make sure that he is 100% healthy. Kyle Long is on the other side of that. In that, believe it or not, Kyle's 30 already. He was an old rookie. He was 24 when the Bears drafted him. Allen Robinson going into his fifth year in the NFL is 24. So think about that for a minute. Kyle Long has the ability to be the best guard in football, one of the best offensive linemen. If they can ever get him back to 100% health, where he hasn't been over the last two seasons. And so, yes, you are absolutely going to treat them with kid gloves. But, Bob, I have a question for you. This was bugging me this past week when we were in the media session, and I didn't want to sound like an idiot in case I've got my facts wrong, but my understanding was that Leonard Floyd didn't require surgery, you know, and it certainly wasn't an ACL. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but how much do you recall or know about exactly what the Floyd injury was, what the treatment and the rehab has been? Because it's been bugging me all off season that he is taking so long to be able to just get back into drills.
Yeah, I've had the same concerns, even from the first, the earlier mini camp and from the very first OTA. I've never seen it characterized as anything other than a sprained knee. And if so, this is the longest rehab from a sprained knee I've ever heard of in my life. Even, it could be a pretty severe sprain and not be a complete tear. I get that. But we're talking about an injury that occurred, I believe, in early December last year. Again, maybe they're just going overboard to treat this guy with kid gloves and do everything they can to make sure he doesn't have a recurrence of it. But it does seem like a ridiculously long amount of time for him to recover. And he's really not doing anything. He's doing maybe a slightly more than an Allen Robinson, who had a complete tear of his ACL 2 months earlier or 3 months earlier than Leonard Floyd was hurt. To me, this is a guy, along with Eddie Goldman, which Vic Fangio mentioned, these are two of the guys who, if this Bears defense is to take another step this year and become truly elite, these are guys that have to step up and have to play better than they have. Leonard Floyd, I have no problem with what he's done when he's been out on the field and been healthy, but he needs to be there for 16 games or pretty close to it for this team to take another step, because the one thing they lacked last year was a dominant pass rusher. He can be that if he has a full off season and if he's there for 16 games. That's my first question to Matt Nagy on Wednesday was his development been delayed and been slowed because of the fact that he hasn't been a full participant in the off season? Vic didn't seem too concerned about it. He kind of believed that, yeah, he may be a little bit behind, but he said what hurt him more was the games he missed in December. Now, I think he can easily make that up if he's 100% from day one of training camp. He can be ready to go and be an impact guy that they thought they were getting when they drafted him. He can be an impact guy in week one and for the rest of the season. But you do have to scratch your head and wonder if this injury is way more serious than what we were led to believe.
Yeah, actually, Bob, I'm going back over some notes, digging through. There's some things that aren't even computerized anymore. I've got one of my spiral bound notebooks here, trying to recall. I know it was actually mid-November when the Floyd injury occurred. And I do have a note here. Apparently, he did have surgery to repair partial tears to the MCL and the PCL. He did not have any ACL damage, and that's pretty unusual. And for those who don't really understand football lingo, and believe me, I don't understand all of it either when it gets into medical, when they say a sprained knee, a sprain is a partial tear of a ligament. So if they say a sprained ACL, it's partially torn. When they say torn, that means it's torn in half. So in the case of Floyd, he apparently had partial tears of the MCL and the PCL. He did have some surgery to try and repair it, and you know, we really have no measuring stick here because it's a pretty rare injury. And so, again, I don't want anybody to think that we're suggesting, A, that the Bears did anything wrong medically, or B, that Leonard Floyd is faking it or dogging it or a slow healer. It's none of those things. It's just a particularly rare and unusual injury to deal with and understand.
Bob, you had mentioned Eddie Goldman, and I want to talk for a few more minutes, a little bit more about him. I mean, you had mentioned some of his downfalls. Is he in a spot to have a great season with the Bears this year?
I think he is, and God bless Vic Fangio. He actually is honest when he answers questions, and he said, you know, Eddie Goldman has been a pretty good player, maybe an above-average player, maybe a little bit better than that, but he needs to take another step this year. Last year, he came back and played 15 games. His second year, because of a high ankle sprain, he only started four games, and I think he played in five, and in at least two of those, he was not 100% because of the injury. It was almost a wasted year for him. He did bounce back last year and did a good job, maybe a little bit better than good. But he's a guy, he's a second-round draft pick. He's somebody they were hoping to build around, and I believe he also is only 24 years old. So he's a guy who could clearly have his best football ahead of him, and if he can take that next step, you know, that helps this defense. That, you know, you can't always rely on Akeem Hicks to do everything. Eddie Goldman is capable of, he's not going to be a great pass rusher, but he can collapse the pocket, he can push the pocket, he can be disruptive in the backfield, and he's a guy who can be a shutdown run guy and help them in that regard. And, you know, in addition to that, if Eddie Goldman's playing at peak efficiency, it's only going to make Roquan Smith better and Danny Trevathan better, because he's going to, you know, those guys are going to be there to clean up plays, because they're going to have to, teams are going to have to double team Eddie Goldman if he's playing as well as he can.
They, I know, have very high hopes for Goldman. You know, he's a guy who, again, a little curiosity with him this past week in that. He started practice on Wednesday and didn't finish. And when asked about it afterwards, Matt Nagy said, oh, that's nothing. He had a little problem with the heat and hydration. Well, it was warm out there, no question about it. But you go all the way back to Eddie Goldman's rookie year when he arrived from Florida, of all places, in the summer and could not compete in training camp early because of dehydration issues. And that struck everybody a little bit strange. He had some trouble with it year two as well. He seemed to be over it last year. But now, in his fourth year in the league, to still be talking about that, it does seem a bit strange. Again, nothing to worry about, you know, but it raises the question about these youngsters. They can have all the talent in the world, but do they develop, you know, mentally in the game to a full understanding of what you have to play through, what you don't play through, how you keep yourself on the field, how you take care of your body. I think they are still trying to mature, if you will, Eddie Goldman, and help him understand what he has to do to be on the field 60 minutes for 16 weeks.
I think you're right. I think you have to keep in mind that, as you mentioned, young kid, 24 years old. You know, you shouldn't expect the guy to be to play like a 10-year veteran. But by his fourth year, and I think the training staff is as much, not to blame, but has as much responsibility as Goldman himself for reporting in shape. And, you know, you mentioned it seems very odd that a guy from Florida would have a problem with heat in the Midwest in July. So hopefully he's past that. If he is, I think for the Bears defense to take the next step, he has to take the next step this year.
A few more minutes here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. And guys, I want to shift back to the offense. And we know that the receiver core has got its work cut out for it, and they're working on that. What have you seen from some of these running backs? I mean, is there a lot more emphasis do you see at this practice being put on the run game and working these guys?
Yeah, Dan, that's a good question. And Matt Nagy brought up the fact that, because he was asked about Jordan Howard, and he said, really, I can't give you a clear assessment of Jordan Howard, because what Jordan Howard does best is carry the ball 20 times a game or 25 times a game. During the OTAs, during the mini camps, during all this off-season stuff, it's like a passing league. It's a lot of 7-on-7 passing. It's a lot of 11-on-11 passing. Jordan Howard is not the guy who's going to be an integral part of the passing. He just isn't. That's why they have Tariq Cohen, and that's why they have Benny Cunningham. So the jury right now is out on Jordan Howard. There's no reason to think he won't be a very good running back this season and a guy who's going to get 200 carries. He's shown that he can do that in the past. And I don't think there's going to be a great reduction in his carries. He's still going to be a guy that maybe gets 250 or more carries. But this is not the time of season when he's going to shine because he's just not involved in the passing game.
Yeah, guys, I mean, if there is a position on this team that is, you know, completely settled, I would think it's running back. Jordan Howard is going to be your number one. Tariq Cohen is going to be a probably a 1.5 more than a 2. And Benny Cunningham is going to be your third down back. I expect Michael Burton to make this football team as a fullback. You know, they got a couple kids in camp, Taquan Mizell. They've added Ryan Nall from Oregon State as an undrafted rookie free agent. But those kids are there as much to take cap snaps as anything else. They've literally only got 6 running backs on the roster, which is pretty unusual going into camp. Now, that does tell you that the focus is going to be on Matt Nagy's improvisation and the passing game and the different way they use some of those receivers. I think you'll see Taylor Gabriel running jet sweeps as much as you see Tariq Cohen doing it. And again, he does use a fullback, so I expect Burton to be the fourth back on the team. But they're about as set at fullback. Quarterback and running back are the two positions on this roster where there really isn't any competition.
All right, guys, as we wrap things up, what essentially will the Bears be working on next week as they kick off their veteran minicamp?
It's not going to be all that different from the OTAs, to be honest with you. I think the only difference is that the media gets to see 3 days instead of one because the OTAs have been 3 days a week as well. It is a natural progression, is that Matt Nagy has continued to tell us repeatedly. It's about installing the offense. Now, even though this is a mandatory mini camp, they get one each year, they still don't put pads on. They're still not going to have any contact. So I don't expect you're going to see anything all that different than what we've seen in OTAs. You're just going to hear more about it because there's more media access. And the practices may run a little bit longer. But again, not a lot of dramatic difference from what's gone on so far this summer.
Yeah, I think you're going to see the offense clearly striving to assimilate a bunch of new skill position players that Trubisky has not worked with in the past and working on install at the same time. It's a lot on Trubisky's plate. Defensively, I think job one is getting Roquan Smith familiar with his role in this defense. Everybody assumes he's going to be the starter, and I agree that that's probably going to be the case, but Vic was asked about him, and he said, for him, it's learning the defense, learning where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be there, and things like that. There's no question about the talent, the athleticism, the ability to play against the pass and the run. It's just a question of learning the defense at this point for him.
Dan, the thing to keep in mind here is that with the first mini camp, which was voluntary, teams with a new head coach allowed to have a second camp, but they can't make it mandatory. The OTAs are clearly voluntary. You got teams around the league where guys don't show up. I mean, Le'Veon Bell hasn't been going for years. You had both Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski missing some OTAs in New England. Aaron Donald not participating in L.A. A lot of this is contract related. The Bears have had everybody there. Everybody is showing up for every workout, every OTA, every mini camp, voluntary or not so far. So, the main difference that you see with some teams, you're not going to see with the Bears because everybody is so all in at this point, obviously with the new coaching staff, but also with a fair amount of competition for roster spots other than, as we just talked about, a quarterback and running back.
Hub, you said it. The love is in the air there, and you can feel it when you are at Hallis Hall. You can see it on the players' faces and in the way they answer some of their questions with the media. They really seem to love this coaching staff, and it's, I think a couple weeks ago we had a chance to talk with Sam Acho, and I know that it was about some of the anthem issues, but he had in there a quote of just this team being unified, and I think you see that on this practice field. These are voluntary practices, and yet they're all there, and no one has made any sort of looks that they're not going to be here for these mandatory practices, and I think that hopefully all of this team unity will play out as the season starts, and you know, we've seen it in really all aspects of sports. You get a team that's really connected there, and they're all kind of working on all, firing on all cylinders, if you will. It really kind of, it shows success as the games play out.
You know, Dan, yes, but I want to caution everybody a little bit on this, and we tend to have short memories, sometimes out of convenience, sometimes things just aren't that important. This is legit. I mean, I am really impressed so far with Matt Nagy. I'm really impressed with this coaching staff he's put together. I think you could argue it's an all-star coaching staff, and it certainly has been a breath of fresh air for those of us in the media, because at least to date, they've been a lot more helpful and cooperative than the prior regime. But of all the years that I've been doing this, and this is now 40-plus years on the beat with the Bears, the one regime change that sticks in my mind most, I'll never forget the first day in Bourbonnais, the first year with John Fox and company following the Phil Emery, Mark Trestman disaster, and one veteran after another coming up to me and saying, oh, man, this is so great. It's a breath of fresh air. It's a real NFL locker room and practice field and camp all the time. I mean, guys were so happy and so relieved, and we all know how that ended. So, you know, it's a good start. It's legitimate. I am not trying to belittle it in any way, but these things have very short half-lives, and this is going to continue, Bob, to be a very positive situation until we get to week 3, week 4 of the regular season. If they're not competing and winning, there isn't going to be so much love in the air.
Absolutely right, Hub. They're energetic. They're enthusiastic. Everybody's pumped up, sky high. They're buying into everything. And that will last until the first three-game losing streak, and then we'll see what happens. It's like everybody says, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face, and then, you know, how you react to that is how you're going to react as a team and how successful you're going to be. And I think, you know, it'll be at least probably the second month of the season before we can really make a clear evaluation of whether this was the right move and whether Matt Nagy is going to be the guy that Bears fans have been waiting for to lead this team back to respectability.
All right, guys. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We want to thank you all for listening this week, and we hope that you head on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. As we said, Bears veteran mini camps are throughout the week next week, so we'll be bringing you a review of that as the guys join us back on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. A big thanks to Umphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Glory, which can be found on the album UM Live. So go and download that if you enjoy listening to that track each week here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We want to thank you, the listeners, as always, for checking us out this week, and to Hub Arkish and Bob Laguerre for joining us to discuss the Bears this week. Once again, I'm Dan Mott. For Hub and Bob, we thank you, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care, guys.